Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free.
The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse Baptist Church, and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage. Trump bombed. Afghanistan dropped the big one. Moab. Mother of all bombs. Moab. You know, God has a bomb with the name Moab on it, too, as we shall see. And on the eve of North Korea's anniversary celebration of tyranny, no less. They call their celebration the Day of the Sun. Hope it clears up for them, because right now it's raining. Let's talk about what might happen tomorrow, shall we? Why Trump is sending the U.S. Armada to Korean waters, flying nuke-spotting jets over Korea, and his Secretary of State is saying stuff like, you know, all the talk is over. We've said all that we're going to say. And he left hanging, dangling ominously in the air, thickened by tension, the thought, it's time to act. And talk about increased tensions. China has been buzzing the edges of Japan's airspace for some time now. And Russia too, by the way. Ahmadinejad, you know, notorious Iranian brute. Well, he's up for re-election in Iran. Maybe that's why they're so quiet over there right now. Remember what happened last time? And Obama sat on his hands? Do you suppose if the freedom seekers in Iran go to the streets to protest and Ahmadinejad initiates a slaughter of innocent protesters that Trump might respond differently? Boy, we live in exciting times. Friend, don't think Trump caused these global tensions. Don't let him tell you that. That will be the spin of the left, you know. The truth is Obama's policies put a lid on the pot, turned up the heat, and the pressure is about to explode. Trump's opening the valves, releasing some of the pressure, hopefully in time, to avoid a global explosion into all-out open war. The oppressed in Syria are praising Trump. Yeah, you probably saw the interview of a Syrian survivor with that CNN reporterette who did everything that she could to get that Syrian survivor to speak against Trump, but failed. And he made a most brilliant observation regarding the difference between Obama and Trump. And I probably won't be able to get to it, so I'm going to give it to you right now. When she asked him what he thought of Trump, since Trump would close the borders to Syrian refugees, he said, well, do something so that we don't have to be refugees. And he made the point, we don't want to be refugees. We don't want to come to America. We want to live in our own land. And Obama did nothing to help us that way. If I'm able to finish on this topic in the second segment, I'll lift up the rug and take a look under it at the evidence there, piled it up, making lumps in the rug that the MSM swept under it to hide the truth that Obama was the real Russian puppet. That's something I brought out a few weeks back, by the way. Oh, and now we know Obama's administration was involved in surveillance of Trump's campaign. Yeah, and finally, perhaps we'll get to look at the question, did Trump betray his base? Huh. Is he, as one blogger claimed, just another neocon warmonger? Did he crawl into bed with the feds and pull up the covers to hide a secret globalist agenda in his own heart? Well, well, well. Nah. Okay, folks. It's time for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
My son, an Afghanistan veteran, keeps in touch with his buds still in. He got word a few days ago that troops in South Korea are on alert. It shouldn't surprise us now, but this was a couple of weeks back. They were called out for a maneuver, not unusual, with live ammunition. Very unusual. A few days after he reported that to me, we got word that Trump is sending in the Navy. The Navy strike group called the Carl Vinson steamed from Singapore to North Korean waters, anticipating North Korea's boast they will launch an intercontinental ballistic missile. That's an IBM. As part of their 105th celebration, the anniversary of their founder's birth, the latest crossing of Obama's infamous meaningless red lines to come out of North Korea lately. But as one article put it, there's a new sheriff in town. Trump-appointed Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said, quote, 20 years of talking has brought us to the point we are today. Talk is not going to change the situation, end quote. He said that if North Korea threatens South Korean or American forces, Tillerson said, a preemptive military strike is on the table. Mr. Gallucci of the Los Angeles Times informs us that Washington has been, quote, abuzz over the possibility that North Korea may successfully, keyword, test an intercontinental ballistic missile capable of delivering a nuclear weapon to an American city, end quote. Now, you might remember news of Kim Jong-un boasting about this earlier and saying that it may be sooner than you think. Now, folks, let's back up a little bit and take a look at this. During the Cold War years, Russia and China had several nuclear missiles actually aimed at U.S. targets. At one point, the Soviets had as many as 30,000, quote, tactical and strategic weapons deployed in silos on submarines and aboard bombers. The North Koreans, he tells us, have fewer than 20 by comparison. Now, what's the difference now? Barring information that we don't have available, such as the discovery of an active plan to launch a nuclear missile on America, or on Seoul, or Tokyo for that matter, there's deep animosity between North Korea and Japan. It may be that reports are coming out of North Korea, or from other intelligence gathering sources, that Kim Jong-un is so unstable, so reckless, that it's feared, even among his own advisors, that he might do something remarkably stupid. We have a scenario developing similar in some ways to what got us involved in Iraq. Iraq was constantly saber-rattling about taking out Israel and attacking America and all that, threatening to disrupt the Middle East. America was growing increasingly weary and feeling increasingly threatened by this. Iraq began ignoring UN and American sanctions, violated some UN resolutions regarding inspections and so forth, which became the basis for moving on Iraq. America was concerned in that case about reports that Iraq had WMD, weapons of mass destruction. I believe they did, by the way. But it was felt action was needed to prevent Iraq from developing these for use against Israel or against America or other friendly countries or anyone for that matter. In North Korea, babyface Kim, specifically, is constantly threatening America, South Korea, and Tokyo, flaunting UN resolutions and warnings against moving forward with its quest to get the bomb. Or really, they've got the bomb, but the ability to deliver it to Americans soil or other targets. They have repeatedly threatened to, for example, turn Seoul, Korea into a sea of fire. Responding to Bush, including North Korea, in the axis of evil comment he made a while back, North Korea responded saying they would, quote, mercilessly wipe out the aggressors, end quote, referring to us. They warned back in 2012 they had targeted 7 South Korean media groups and promised to engage them in a, quote, sacred war, end quote. North Korean propaganda is full of this sort of thing, constantly, and the inclination might be to dismiss it as mere bluster and chest pounding. However, North Korea has acted on its threats more than once, and these actions are increasingly concerning. I mean, for a relatively recent example, in 2010, North Korea attacked a South Korean island, and their increasing missile tests show an intention to get the nuclear power they need to act on their threats against South Korea, America, and even Tokyo. When America declared an intention to conduct joint military exercises with South Korea, North Korea reacted, threatening a preemptive nuclear attack on America. That's worthy of notice that for years, North Korea's rhetoric was aimed at deriding America's accusations. This insane accusation that North Korea was trying to develop ballistic missile technology to enable them to deliver their nuclear warheads to American soil, right? Remember that? Now, North Korea has changed its rhetoric to say it plans to use ballistic missiles to strike U.S. targets. The reason we take this stuff seriously is that there has been a long history of North Korea attacking South Korea and the United States, by the way. In 1997, North Korea attacked a South Korean ship called the Dangpo, or Dangpo, killing 39 crewmen. And don't forget that North Korea has already attacked us. You know, it's little talked of, little remembered, but did you know that North Korea is the only foreign power that holds a U.S. warship? Yeah, the USS Pueblo was captured in international waters, by the way, by North Korea. No one even dreamed at that time North Korea would do something like this, and the U.S. was totally unprepared. Quote, one crew member died, 82 were taken to North Korean prison camps. They were held for 11 months, accused of spying. Now, they were released once the U.S. apologized and insisted the ship had not been spying, later retracting both statements, end quote. Now, that was Lyndon Baines Johnson. Concerned, he blustered about throwing some nukes at him, but at the end of the day, he was concerned about a conflict with the USSR at the time. Johnson issued an apology to North Korea, securing the release of the prisoners. And then during Nixon's presidency, the very next year, 1969, Kim Il-sung, supposedly birthed from a shooting star, whose birthday is celebrated tomorrow, said Kim Il-sung shot down a spy plane over the Sea of Japan. Nixon was furious, and he ordered his joint chiefs to put together a plan to nuke North Korea. Yeah, called him, put him on the job. Kissinger followed up with a call to the joint chiefs and told them the commander-in-chief was drunk, and they should stand down until Nixon woke up sober the next day before they proceeded with the order. Clearly, when Nixon was clear-headed the next day, he backed off the nuking plan. Essentially, concerned it would add further conflict with Russia and might interfere with plans, he had to reach out to China. But he did enjoy letting those Russians imagine that he would go nuclear, sending some of our bombers in their direction a couple of times. I don't know if you remember all that. Add to all of this that lately, we learned North Korea restarted its main nuclear reactor complex at Yongbyon, which they have used to produce weapons-grade plutonium. Experts tell us North Korea can produce enough for one bomb in 1 year. They have claimed they are prepared now to respond to U.S. hostility with a nuclear attack. So hopefully you can understand the context in which these events are developing. Why Tillerson has said talking's over. We've said all there is to say. Why Trump is sending in the Armada and flying nuke-spotting planes over North Korea. Why Korea is threatening to go to war in response to all this. And all of this coming on North Korea's April 15th celebration of the birth of their founder, babyface Kim's grandfather, Kim Il-sung, born from a shooting star 105 years ago. April 15 is called Day of the Sun in North Korea. It marks the birthday of their founder, Kim Il-sung. His chosen name, by the way, not his given name. Born in 1912. Sung means to realize the sun in Korean. He put it out that he was born of a shooting star. It was an effort to help him get past his baby. Yeah, Grandpa had a baby face too. His baby face appearance and get people to take him seriously. Seriously? He was born the same day the Titanic sank. Now that sounds portentous. Not pretentious. Their calendar is built on their founder. They call their years, I don't know how to pronounce it in Korean, but Juche. It's spelled J-U-C-H-E, and it means self-reliance. It's interesting. In other words, they mark their years from Kim Il-sung, who began the years of self-reliance, placed in power by the Soviets, a puppet to the Soviets, and now a veritable puppet state to China. I bring all this out to show the self-delusion of the North Korean government, an entire country lost to reality and a personality cult begun by their founder with the help of the former USSR. It's possible their founder, Kim Il-sung, understood this pretentiousness of the whole thing, but there's reason to fear. His grandson has bought into the fantasy and actually thinks he's some kind of god, you know, or at least grandson of a god that was born from a shooting star. We experienced what this sort of manic delusion of deity god rulers in the past. Remember Japan's emperor during World War II. That kind of fanaticism is hard to guess what they're going to do. But this nonsense is reaching 70 years. Yeah, it's almost 70 years now that this has been going on. And that's the number of the end of oppressors. Yeah. Isaiah 23, 15 to 17, Jeremiah 25, 11 to 12, and Daniel 9, 2. When God judges a people, he will put them under oppression for 70 years. That appears to be the maximum sentence. Sometimes it's 40, but the maximum seems to be 70. I say your Bible, and that's kind of interesting. North Korea is approaching its 70th year of oppression over its people, and the oppression is so dire. Well, we'll see what happens tomorrow. As again, I find myself preparing my show Friday to be aired tomorrow when there's such events going on scheduled for this weekend. Will April 15th mark the beginning of the end of Kim's oppression of North Korea? Well, we'll see. Hold on through the break. I'll be right back.
How to know if you are a lights on or a lights off listener. If you find yourself suddenly feeling like someone turned on a bright light inside your head, and this is followed by a sense of euphoria, described by some as a feeling that you have just been enveloped into the warm and comforting embrace of the truth, then you are a lights on listener. However, if you experience sudden bursts of rage, uncontrolled trembling of the lower lip, sweaty palms, and mental disorientation, then you are definitely a lights off listener. Now that you know what symptoms to look for, call 888-770-8000 and leave your message. Is it lights on or lights off? Call 888-770-8000. The pastor is ready to receive your message. Your brain massage will continue in a moment.
Satan is called the dragon and prince of the power of the air. The devil beware. Pastor Scheinbach is on the air, swinging the sword of truth at the dragons of deceit, thrusting the blade of incisive insight into the belly of liberal lies, lies that blind men's mind in darkness. He wants to know if you have his back. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. The Thought Provocateur is available on the web. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com. Satan is called the dragon and prince of the power of the air. The devil beware. Pastor Scheinbach is on the air, swinging the sword of truth at the dragons of deceit, thrusting the blade of incisive insight into the belly of liberal lies, lies that blind men's mind in darkness. He wants to know if you have his back. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. The Brain Massage Show releases truth antibodies in the brain that attack and destroy liberal lies.
Hello, my friends. Welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheinbach, pastor at Lighthouse Baptist Church here in Santa Maria, California, your brain masseur and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. Hey, let's lift up the rug here, shall we? Oh, there, look at that. Evidence the MSM has swept under it, trying to hide the truth that Obama was the real Russian puppet. Something I brought out a few weeks back, you know. And here, look, proof. We know now that Obama's administration was involved in surveilling Trump's campaign. Here's the article, headlined, quote, "Facts point to Obama as the real Russian puppet," end quote, published in the Conservative Tribune. This article refers us to an op-ed in the New York Post. Quote, "National Review's Rich Lowry declared that there really was a Russian puppet in the White House, and his name was Barack Obama," end quote. Lowry pointed out that circumstantial evidence is mounting that the Kremlin succeeded in infiltrating the U.S. government at the highest levels during the Obama administration. And then, as I continue to read, I begin to think, good night. Did Lowry get a hold of my show notes from a few episodes back? I mean, he cites almost all of the same evidence I brought out, showing Obama is the Russian lackey, not Trump. Obama sent Hillary to Russia with the reset button, remember? Obama concluded the New START agreement that effectively reduced our nuclear forces, but not theirs. Something, by the way, that he promised he'd take care of, you know, if the Russians would just be patient. Still reading from this article, by the way. And although now Obama et al. Are at least apparently all fired up about Russian spying, well, during his campaign, when Romney warned about Russia, Obama ridiculed him as a Cold War relic. And then Obama sidled up with Russia on an agreement with Iran that paved the way for them to go nuclear. And during the infamous red line fiasco, remember that one? Obama drawing one red line after another as Iranian continued to advance across each one. Obama turned to Russia for help with Iran. But at what cost? Apparently, Obama promised to stand down while Russia entered into Syria to prop up Assad. Oh, and let's get real here. Obama never seriously opposed Russia's aggression in Ukraine. For example, when Ukraine begged for assistance, Obama refused to provide weapons Ukraine needed to defend itself against the Russians. Furthermore, Obama cut defense spending and cut down on fossil fuels, which, by the way, are policies that favored Russian interests and not ours. Listen, Obama has bowed to Russian interests almost as deeply as he bowed to the King of Saud. And I'm not buying this latest dog and pony show being put on for us. It's all theater. I'm not. I don't know why so many seem to think Obama and Putin are enemies. I think it's a lie, a ruse to use deception to blind us to what's really going on. You've heard me say this several times, and I hope someone out there is paying attention. There is no way Putin wants an American president who is determined to strengthen our military. Maybe Russia and China will stand down while Trump gets rid of two major irritations to them, thorns in their side, Assad and Kim. But there is no way either of these leaders is glad that Trump is president of the United States. And here's another huge lump on the rug that's exposed. Quote, President Donald Trump has been vindicated for claiming he had his, quote, wires tapped, end quote, by the Obama administration, end quote. Washington Post revealed that the FBI received permission from a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, that's FISA court, to surveil one of Trump's campaign advisors. So now the question is, what's going to be done about this? Well, Obama's abuse of power became so routine, who knows? I guess we'll see. Finally, has Trump betrayed his base? Is he, as one blogger claimed, just another neocon whoremonger? Did he crawl into bed with the feds and pull up the covers to hide a secret globalist agenda that he's kept secret in his own heart? Well, isn't this interesting? Let's go over some of Trump's alleged flip-flop, shall we? Quote, he said, I think NATO's obsolete, remember? March 27, 2016. But recently he said, quote, "It's my hope that NATO will take on an increased role in supporting our Iraqi partners in their battle against ISIS." End quote. China, he said, quote, "On day one of a Trump administration, the U.S. Treasury Department will designate China a currency manipulator," end quote. November 9, 2015. About a week ago, he reversed himself and said, quote, "They're not currency manipulators," end quote. Okay. With regard to Russia, he said, quote, "I was over in Moscow 2 years ago, and I will tell you, you can get along with those people and get along with them. Well, you can make deals with those people. Obama can't." He said that on Fox's Bill O'Reilly. Quote, "It would be wonderful, as we were discussing just a little while ago, if NATO and our country could get along with Russia. Right now, we're not getting along with Russia at all. We may be at an all-time low in terms of a relationship with Russia." That's Trump at a press conference with NATO Secretary General Wednesday. Now, with regard to Syria, quote, "The president must get congressional approval before attacking Syria. Big mistake if he does not." Remember that? August 30, 2013. Trump repeatedly advised that Obama should not attack Syria, didn't they? He said, quote, "Again, to our very foolish leader, do not attack Syria. If you do, many very bad things will happen. And from that fight, the U.S. gets nothing," end quote. September 5, 2013. He said, quote, "President Obama, do not attack Syria. There's no upside and tremendous downside. Save your powder for another and more important day," end quote. September 7, 2013. But, you know, he becomes president. And what does he do when Assad uses chemical weapons? He attacks Syria. And in the interest of full disclosure, I must tell you, I approve that decision. But we have to admit, it's a changed tune. Quote, "Assad choked out the lives of innocent men and women and children. It was a slow and brutal death, for so many, even beautiful babies, were cruelly murdered in this very barbaric attack. No child of God should ever suffer such horror. Tonight, I ordered a targeted military strike on the airfield in Syria from where the chemical attack was launched. It is in this vital national security interest of the United States to prevent and deter the spread and use of deadly chemical weapons," and so on. End quote. That's April 6, in a speech justifying his use of military action against Syria. How about the Export-Import Bank? Quote, "I don't like it," he's speaking of the Export-Import Bank, "because I don't think it's necessary. It's a one-way street also. It's sort of a feather bedding for politicians and others and a few companies. And these are companies that can do very well without it. So I don't like it. I think it's a lot of excess baggage. I think it's unnecessary. And when you think about free enterprise, it's really not free enterprise. I'd be against it," end quote. All right. But after he became president, his tune changed to this one, too. Quote, "It turns out that, first of all, lots of small companies are really helped. The vendor companies, so on. But also, maybe more important, other countries give assistance. When other countries give it, we lose a tremendous amount of business. Instinctively, you would say, isn't that a ridiculous thing? But actually, it's a very good thing. It actually makes money. It could make a lot of money," end quote. And of course, that's a pretty confused bunch of stuff. I just quoted what he said, and I've had that problem with Trump's rhetoric before. The bottom line is he's saying, you know, "I didn't like it, but now I've figured out that I like it." Goldman Sachs, quote, "I know the guys at Goldman Sachs. They have total control over him," speaking of Obama, "just like they have total control over Hillary Clinton," end quote. All right. And then even more ominously, he says, quote, "We've seen this firsthand in the WikiLeaks documents in which Hillary Clinton meets in secret with international banks to plot the destruction of U.S. sovereignty in order to enrich these global financial powers, her special interest friends and her donors," end quote. All right. But then he becomes president and Trump hires a slew of people with Goldman Sachs on their resumes to key positions in his White House. Steve Bannon, Gary Kahn, director of his National Economic Council, Dinah Powell, deputy national security advisor, Steve Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, Anthony Scaramucci, the Office of Public Engagement and Intergovernmental Affairs, although he got rejected because it was found that he was in the process of selling his hedge company to a Chinese company. Bloomberg reported that Goldman Sachs, quote, "after being largely cut out of the federal government during the Obama years, with few of its alums tapped for big jobs, Goldman is starting to live up to its former nickname, Government Sachs," end quote. Federal Reserve Chairwoman Janet Yellen, Trump said before he was elected, quote, "she's keeping rates artificially low to get Obama retired. Watch what is going to happen afterwards. It is a very serious problem, and I think it is very political. I think she is very political, and to a certain extent, I think she should be ashamed of herself because it's not supposed to be that way," end quote. And then he said in September 26, 2016, quote, "we're in a big, fat, ugly bubble, and we'd better be awfully careful, and we have a Fed that's doing political things, This Janet Yellen on the Fed is doing political by keeping the interest rates at this level, end quote. Again, it gets garbled, but you get the point of what he's saying. Now he becomes president and he says, quote, I do like a low interest rate policy. I must be honest with you. No, not toast. I like her. I respect her, end quote. Talking about Yellen, she's not toast. He's going to protect. Okay, he's going to step in for her. Sean Spicer explains that these are not examples of Trump changing. It's everything else changing in Trump's direction. He said, quote, if you look at what's happened, it's those entities or individuals in some cases or issues evolving towards the president's position, end quote. And obviously allowing him then to be supportive of what he was not supportive of before. Is that true? It could be. Anyway, Spicer said, per NPR White House correspondent Scott Hosley, quote, NATO in particular, he talked about the need of countries to pay their fair share, to live up to their commitments of 2% of GDP. He talked about the need for NATO to focus more on terrorism. NATO has done just that, end quote. That's an example he gives of, you know, things changing, and so he can change. Now, folks, on almost all of this, I didn't agree with the naysayers anyway. I mean, really, I didn't have a problem with somebody who had Goldman Sachs on their resume. I don't get that kind of thinking, all right? Remember the brouhaha stirred up over Mrs. Cruz, Heidi's former association with that company. I don't believe that someone who works for a company necessarily agrees with all the practices or the agenda of that company. I don't think everybody who works at Starbucks believes in promoting the homosexual lifestyle. But I do think it's funny that so many at Trump's urging, by the way, made such an ado about Heidi's former association with Goldman Sachs. Now, as president, he's appointed more former Goldman Sachs people than Obama or Bush did together. I mean, the hypocrisy is disturbing, and it's something I really don't like about Trump. But the fact is, hiring someone who worked for a company I don't like is not a problem unless their own ideology is contrary to the interests of America and so on. So it's like I said going in. Trump is ideologically flexible. And just like I predicted, his diehard supporters are going to explain away any changes he makes by just explaining, well, he's a deal maker, you know, give him some negotiating room and all that kind of thing. And there is some truth to that, by the way. The fact is, Trump is proving to be more of the president I would have liked than the one so many of those supporting him who got mad at me because I didn't thought he would be. I find this very intriguing. I didn't support Trump coming into this election, as you know. And yet I've ended up with almost exactly the sort of president I was praying for. I won't have time, sadly, to address the charge of some conservatives that Trump is just another neocon warmonger. I will only say this. America, with great power comes great responsibility. We can't police the world, but we can do what we can, and we should do what we ought to do when we can. There are rules of intervention, however, and it's becoming increasingly clear that we need these guidelines to be spelled out. So, Lord willing, I'll address that next time and offer our biblical principles on rules of engagement. I've lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you call and let me know you see they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000 and say lights on if you agree, lights off if you disagree. Or go to our website, brainmassage.net. That's brainmassage.net. You'll see a place there to connect with me and also a place there to make a donation to help support our broadcast. So let me make a very personal and very special appeal to you. If you listen to the show by radio and you're interested in keeping it on the radio, then you need to help us because the costs, frankly, are more than we can continue to bear without your help. So we need you to step in with a donation and, you know, for $1 to $1,000 or whatever, $20,000, something to help us stay on the air and also, by the way, to expand on our radio outreach. But we'll need your help to do that. So go to our website, brainmassage.net, click on the donate button and help us out here. Or call the church and make arrangements to make a gift. And gifts to the church ministry are tax deductible, by the way. And it's tax season, so you might be thinking about that. God bless you. God bless America. And I'll see you in church.